Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. My name is James Gearing, and this is episode 173. And I am very excited to bring to you this week John Glaude, aka Obese to Beast. If you heard my interview with Ron Ortiz, CrossFit athlete, he mentioned reaching out to him. If you saw the CrossFit Games this year, one of the videos they had in the intermission was John's story. And the cliff notes, John went from 360 pounds to around 200 pounds, at one point losing 170 pounds. And what makes this interview so great is he made mistakes and still lost weight. So we talk about that. His initial plan that worked, had he stayed with it, probably would have sent him back up to the way he was before. But once he started that journey, he started adapting it and realizing healthier options. He found CrossFit. And so this was such an incredible insight into a man who actually did it. I mean, we see these guys with six packs and, you know, glistening bodies covered in baby oil talking about weight loss. And you know that most of those people have probably never been there. Well, John has, and he's come there. He talks about the excess skin that he had from being very heavy. So a real human story on finding yourself extremely deconditioned and then fighting down that journey to get yourself back to good health. So you're going to get so much from this. I'm so glad I was able to get him on the show. Before we go to the interview, as I always say, please go to iTunes, whatever podcast app that you use to listen to this, rate the show, make sure you subscribe, of course, and then take your social media and share these episodes. If you know anyone who's struggling with the weight, obviously this would be a great one to send to them this week. But social media can be so powerful if we just use it in a positive way. So with that being said, I introduce to you John Glaude. Enjoy. All right, so John, I want to start by saying thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I reached out to you, following you on social media after Ron Ortiz told me about you. I was blown away by your story, and I'm so glad that you were able to and willing to speak to the people that listen to this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really stoked to be on it, and I appreciate Ron out there, if you're listening. Thanks for putting my name out there.
All right, so very first question, where are we finding you on planet Earth today?
So I live in San Diego, California.
San Diego, brilliant. And is that where you were born?
Yeah. Yep, born and raised. So I'm 26 years old, so 1992. So I've lived here my whole life. And I'm a very typical Southern Californian that I am very spoiled by the weather. And when it gets like under 55 degrees, I really feel like the world is ending.
All right. Well, excuse me. I've heard you talk about, you know, your early years, and I think that's a very important place to start because, I think there's a lot of people that look at people later in life, whether it's, obesity or addiction problems or whatever it is, and they immediately judge and they forget that a lot of us weren't set up perfectly to have a healthy mental, healthy physical functioning life. So, if you wouldn't mind, tell me what your family unit was like, what your parents did, and those initial few years for you and your brother.
Yeah, so I definitely had a rough go at the beginning of my life. Now, all of the things that I went through, I definitely am now grateful for, but it was hard when you're a kid. So growing up, we did not have much money at all. I was actually taken away from my mom and my dad when I was about 3 years old because they were drug addicts. They also sold drugs and stuff. So they just bad crowd. They actually ended up at one point, my mom told me she was like dealing drugs for the Hells Angels, which is like a prolific kind of motorcycle gang here in California and kind of all over the United States. Right. So just bad stuff with bad people. My mom had a crazy life before I was ever born. But you know, she ended up, we got taken away, CPS was called and we luckily ended up with my uncle for a year. And if we didn't go with him, we would have been at some house. I don't even know, we would have just been in the foster care system. But eventually my mom, she got clean. She went to this, a Christian rehabilitation, place. Luckily they sent her there and she was able to get clean. So after a year we were put back with her. So, thank God that happened, because I can only imagine where I would be if that didn't happen. And so, but even after getting put back with her, obviously she, being a drug dealer before, she didn't have the most, you know, education. So we were definitely like a low income family. And I actually have seven siblings, but basically I grew up with my older brother, whose name is Jean, and then my younger sister, whose name is Evelyn. And then we were kind of the three siblings that lived with my mom through this time, right? And so we basically, like, food and all of that stuff was really hard to come by. We were, you know, we were in on Section 8, which is like government housing. We had food stamps, all of that stuff. So we just didn't have that much money. And so growing up, I was actually, I was quote unquote, normal sized kid. I didn't really struggle with weight or anything like that. And actually, when I was like 6 years old, five or six, I actually got a hernia and one of the ones like kind of by your like pelvis area. And I got that removed, but I was like bedridden for a couple weeks. And I don't know if this has anything, if it's connected in any way, but that's when I started gaining my weight. So for the people that are listening that might not know my story. So when I was 20 years old, I was actually 360 pounds. So I kind of want to tell the story of how I got there. So, you know, 6 years old, I started gaining weight, and then it just became like normal to just gain weight every single year, right? Like, I would go back to school. We, like, the only time we would ever get new clothes was when we were, you know, back to school shopping. So every year it was just like, okay, you're a bigger size shirt, your pants are getting bigger. And, you know, growing up in that family, it's just food was, you know, it was a priority as far as feeding everybody, but it's not like it was a priority as far as trying to get the healthiest things. And my mom obviously didn't have knowledge about that stuff. So we just grew up eating whatever you can, really. And like, she would make big, like, I just remember when I was younger, my mom would, we never like sat down and ate dinner together, right? So it was all about making a huge pot of food. A lot of times it would be like hamburger helper or macaroni and cheese, like just a big pot of food. And then you went and got it. So if you wanted more, you had to eat fast. So that's still something I struggle with, is I eat unbelievably fast. Like, my girlfriend and stuff like that, she'll be eating with me and she's like, how are you already done? And she like has only taken three bites. I'm like, because I need to get seconds. But so yeah, like growing up, that was a normal thing, right? So, and then, so I just started kind of gaining weight. And, you know, we would get fast food a lot. That was kind of like our treat, was if you did well, or like, I remember whenever it was the last day of school, we would go to Hometown Buffet. And like, that was a, the food was always kind of like a treat for us, because we were always kind of eating the cheapest stuff possible. And then if we could go get something quote unquote nice, it would be, you know, fast food. So I just kind of continued gaining weight all throughout middle school, you know, and like, I like to say in elementary school, I was pretty husky. In middle school, I was obese. And then in high school, I was the, you know, the heaviest kid at my school. And so I was always, I don't want to say I was, you know, super athletic, but I enjoyed sports. So I played like flag football. Actually, it's a funny story. I'm kind of going off on tangents, but all of this kind of makes sense.
No. Go, and tangents are great. Go for it.
Yeah. So I ended up, like, I love football. Well, I used to like it a lot more than I do now, but when I was growing up, I love football, but San Diego Chargers were my team. Now they're the LA Chargers. It's kind of a, yeah, I don't, it's a weird situation there, but, you know, I love football, and I always wanted to play Pop Warner, which, if you don't know, it's basically just tackle football for little kids, right, before you're in high school. And I always wanted to play, but one, we couldn't afford it. That was a big part. But the other part was I was actually too heavy to play. There was like a weight limit, and I was always over it. So I was never able to play, you know, Pop Warner football. So I would play flag football. And it's crazy because I was always super passionate about it. So I was the center. So you played both sides of the ball, right? So I would be the center when we were on offense. And then when we were on defense, I would just be like a D lineman. But even being those positions, I would get MVP. I got MVP twice, which just doesn't make any sense. You know, usually MVP is like the quarterback or like a running back or a wide receiver. But I just, I would take control. And like my nickname when I played flag football and stuff was Rhino, because like the first day of practice that we ever had, there was this drill where the ball carrier would be just running in a straight line. And then the person that was trying to get their flag would be kind of coming diagonally and trying to get the flag. And a lot of the kids would like run and try and grab it and miss it. And I just like ran as fast as I could. And I'm pretty chubby at this point already, right? Just run as fast as I can, and I dive for the flag and get it. And I remember the coach was like, man, you're like a rhino. And so they called me Rhino the whole time I played flag football, right? So I absolutely love football. And the reason I'm telling the story is because Once I ended up getting into high school, I was so excited to play football. Like that was that I in my head, like in eighth grade, before I got into ninth grade, like I'm going to be the football player. Like that's going to be my persona. And so when I actually went to tryouts, things didn't go the way I wanted them to. So the first thing that they do at least at my high school for tryouts was you just run a lap, which is a 400 meter, you know, lap. But they would do it to where they would put the bigger people at the front of you'd run in a line and they'd put the bigger people at the front basically to try and motivate you to run faster. Right. So you're in front. So like the wide receivers, all the smaller dudes are behind you trying to push you to run faster. I couldn't even run a quarter of the lap. Like I couldn't even run 100 meters. Right. So I'm walking. Everyone's running past me. Most people are like, come on, you can do it. But, you know, there's some jeers and stuff like that. So that was like definitely a hit to my ego, if you will. And at this point, I'm probably, I don't know, in ninth grade, I was probably like, you know, close to 280. I don't even know exactly what weight I was. I never weighed myself. But then we went and did like, we did some of the field drills, just kind of like, you know, running on the field, doing just certain things. I did okay there. And then we went into the weight room. And I remember just being like, so, because I'd never lifted a weight in my life. So I was so out of my element and so just like kind of nervous. And I remember we did a couple things, but then they had a squat, right? And I was with these, like, I think it was older dudes. They're probably like juniors or seniors or whatever. And they ended up like putting 135 on the bar, which is funny because now that is definitely like just a warm up weight, nothing crazy. But I had never back squatted. I never had a bar on my back, right? So like I end up getting under the bar. The bar is like sitting on my neck, like just crushing me. I can't do it. So I racked the bar and I'm like, I can't do this. And then one of the dudes, I remember he said to me, like, you're the biggest dude here and you can't even lift that weight. Like, what are you good for? Right. And that just crushed me. And like the whole experience was hard. So I ended up like, you know, I'm somebody when I get upset or hurt, like I get tears in my eyes. So I had tears in my eyes. I went up to one of the coaches and I said, hey, I got to go. My mom is sick and she called me and I have to go, you know, whatever. I made up a lie. And so I left and I never played football again. And like it's one of the things that it's a story I tell because on one hand, like I regret not being able to just stand up for myself or at least just push through and like be like, no, screw what this person thinks. Like I'm going to do this. But at the same time, it's all the things I've been through have put me where I am now, you know? So going through high school, you know, I never ended up playing football. It's probably one of the things that I kind of regret the most. But again, you know, it is what it is. There's nothing I can do about it. And so I ended up graduating high school. Once I graduated, I was probably, you know, pushing 320 pounds. And I just kind of started gaining weight even more rapidly after I left high school because I used to like skateboard everywhere I went. And then once I got like a job and stuff like that, I basically was just sitting. I would just sit at home. And then the only time I would really leave the house was to go to work. And I worked at a shoe store, just selling shoes, a van shoe store. And so that's when I kind of started gaining weight even faster. And then by the time I hit 20 years old was when I was at my heaviest of 360 pounds. And, you know, there was a couple things that kind of led to me making the decision of like, I want to start losing weight. Now, obviously, growing up, I had tried a couple times, nothing really crazy. I was never that person that would lose like 60 pounds, 70 pounds, and then gain it back. I had such little like motivation and belief in myself that like I would lose maybe 10 pounds and then kind of just give up, you know? So there's this kind of a story that led into the night of me deciding like I needed to lose weight. So I was 20 years old and I ended up I was with friends. We drove from San Diego all the way up to this place called Ogden, Utah, which is like in northern Utah. And it's about a 13-hour drive. And it was for a friend of mine's wedding. And at the time, I was wearing a size 5XL shirt and 56-inch pants, right? So that was the heaviest that I ever was. And trying to find clothes when you are that big is a pain in the butt. Like, it is not fun. And so luckily, my best friend, it was his brother's wedding that we were going to. He went with me and we tried to find clothes. And I ended up finding stuff that I was pretty excited about. I thought I looked fly. I was like, you know, I'm going to get all the ladies like this. But I was like, you know, I was happy with it took a long time, but I was happy with what I got. I thought I looked good. We end up going to the wedding or driving up there at least. And I remember when I went to get out of the car, I almost fell back into the car. And now this scared the living daylights out of me because, and this is crazy to say, and it still blows me away when I think about it, but I was 20 years old and I constantly thought about dying. constantly. I was always afraid I was going to have a heart attack because I knew, like, even though I was morbidly obese, like, I knew this was not sustainable. Like, I was going to die soon. And it's just crazy to think like that because it was so true. I remember thinking, I'm going to be dead before I'm 40, and just kind of accepting it because I can't lose weight. Like, that's what went through my head. And so when that happened, when I fell back into the car and I genuinely had no idea what was going on, it scared me so bad. And I ended up, like, the people in the car saw me do that. And they're like, are you okay? I was like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. It's just, you know, because, like, the drive was a long drive. I didn't drink any water. I was just eating crap food, right? So I just kind of said it was that, and, like, the change of elevation as well. Like, I just need to take some ibuprofen and I'll be fine. So we end up going into the house to take the ibuprofen. But the whole time I was there for the wedding, I felt a little, like, just off. And I was just, like, so much anxiety going through my head. And I mean, it's not good that I did this, but I did not even get checked up. Like, I was too afraid to even go to a doctor, so I just kind of, like, hoped everything was okay. And luckily I was fine. Nothing ended up happening. So, you know, we go to the wedding, it's fun, I have a good time. Then we drive back down, and then obviously a couple weeks later the pictures come out from the wedding, or maybe it was even just a couple days, and then the photos came out. And so one of the pictures from the wedding is my background on my phone, and I use that as a way to, every time I pick up my phone, I can see my former self, my former 360-pound self, and I know that I will never get back to that. There's no chance, and there's just no chance. But so I saw those pictures, and I just remember being, like, mortified and just thinking, again, like I said to myself when I first got there, like, I was so stoked about the outfit, and I remember just looking at it and being like, wow, that's what I looked like that whole weekend. Like, that is terrible. But it's funny because that actually wasn't even the turning point for me. But I really do think that that whole story and all of those things I went through really got me to a point where I could change. So fast forward a little bit. I don't even remember how long it was. It definitely wasn't that long after the wedding. I was sitting on the couch or on my bed in my room watching Netflix. And I was actually binge watching Miami Ink, which is a reality TV show about tattoos. And they would just film people getting tattoos, talking about what the tattoo is about, blah, 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 blah. And I really liked tattoos. And at the time, I only had two, and they were both on my forearms. Because even though I was overweight, like, I had this kind of feeling like, maybe if I ever lose the weight, I don't know what my arms will look like my, you know, or my chest or whatever. So I don't want to get tattoos anywhere else. So I think my forearms will always be okay. And luckily, that was actually true, and it worked out really well. But I was watching the show, and I would see people getting these amazing tattoos on their chest, on their back, on their upper arms, on their shoulders, and just being like, honestly, like, being jealous, because I, like, there was no way I would ever get a tattoo there because of how big I was. So I was like, I'm never going to show anybody. I don't like it. So I just, you know, I would be like jealous, like genuinely like, man, I'm jealous of that tattoo. And then somebody came on the show that had lost a lot of weight, and he was obviously that he was getting like a tattoo to commemorate his weight loss. And they were asking him, obviously, how did you lose the weight? And I honestly don't even remember exactly the words that he said, but basically it was something along the lines of like, I realized that it was choices that I was making that made me obese. So I just needed to make better choices. And he said something like, he would look in the mirror when he was like hungry and trying to eat something that maybe wasn't the best. And he would look in the mirror and was like, do you want to be back to where you were at the start? Like, is that cheeseburger worth it? Or do you need, you know, will you make another decision? And so, but at that time, and this is actually something that I've realized recently, that's the first time I took full responsibility for where I was in my life. You know, the 360-pound 20-year-old, because subconsciously I almost kind of blamed my past, you know, how I grew up. I blamed all of the reasons why, whose fault it was. It was this person's fault. It was that person's fault. It's my mom's fault. It's my dad's fault. It's my, you know, the fact that we didn't have much money, and that's why I'm so big. But in reality, like, it genuinely doesn't matter whose fault something is, because especially when it comes to your health, it's your responsibility. And so I realized that, and that night was the night that I decided to lose weight. And I remember I woke up the next day, and I mean, it was like, I don't even know how to explain it. It was like this weight was like truly lifted off of my shoulders. And I woke up the next day, and I was actually eating that night. It's funny. I was actually eating a double entree plate from Panda Express of orange chicken and chow mein. with a, like, just a gigantic soda. Their sodas there are huge. It was like 40 ounces, right? And but I, like, I was eating it and I was like, I'm going to finish this and this is it. This is the last, like, this is my last meal. I don't really recommend that to most people, but for some reason that's just what went through my head. So I woke up the next day and I, like I said, felt like a new man. So I remember I woke up and I, at this point, I knew nothing about nutrition at all, but I knew that what I was eating wasn't good. So I remember I woke up, I went and got a haircut because I was like, I'm a new person, I need to change something. And then I went to Vons, which is like a local grocery store, and I bought water and I bought like a sandwich because I was like, I don't know what's healthy, but a sandwich is healthier than what I'm eating normally. And then that was the change right there. That was my, you know, my kind of like my turning point. That was what I call is my click moment. That was my click moment. And everything since that point has been completely different for me.
That's amazing. Well, firstly, the thing that you said most recently is, I think, an area that a lot of people kind of get stuck in. And it's the blaming of your upbringing and your parents. And you know, and I want to kind of delve into that in a moment. And that side where a lot of people won't do anything. They're inactive because they just stick on that. And then there's other people that don't give themselves permission to acknowledge that and think it's all on them, and then they struggle with the other side. And I think the happy medium is where it's at. Your story, the way you grew up, the way you were fed, the way you were educated or not educated on nutrition and food, not only at home but in school as well, is part of the reason why you found out where you were. But the other part of the reason is your own choices. And I think the combination of the two, when people realize that and forgive themselves for mistakes that they've made, but then say, like you said, draw a line in the sand and say, today is the day where I'm now going to be completely in control. That's how you move forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like I recently like made a video on my YouTube channel where I talk about like giving yourself grace, because if you're just beating yourself up constantly, especially say like, you know, you've decided you want to make a change, you want to start losing weight, and then you say you slip up on your diet a little bit. What a lot of people will do is like, well, I've messed up, so I might as well just go all out because like I've already ruined all the progress I've made. When instead you could just be like, I messed up, I'm going to learn from it, and I'm going to forgive myself and move on from that. That's incredibly important, because if you're always sitting there just like mad at yourself and angry at yourself and blaming yourself instead of forgiving yourself, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and that's something I tell, because I coach at the CrossFit gym here in Ocala, and I tell people that have been gone for a bit. You haven't seen them for a few, you know, classes, a few weeks, maybe a few months. And you know, luckily you see and they have come back. And I tell them, if you just stop when you gave up, and someone says, when's the last time you worked out? Okay, well, now it was a month. Now it was 6 months. Now it was a year. But if you just come back today and I see you tomorrow and I say, when was the last time you worked out? Now you can say yesterday. You're already back on that path again.
Yeah, I love that. That's exactly true, because like there's no like reward for you by beating yourself up. Like nobody, the only person that you're injuring is yourself. You know what I mean? So like if you're just constantly beating yourself up, like nobody is seeing that, and you're just like something that actually my brother actually brought up on my podcast recently is about like when he's doing a workout, the voice in his head and what he listens to, instead of like just always being negative and saying like, oh, you can't lift this weight or whatever. Like think of the voice in your head as somebody else talking to you. And if somebody else was being super negative and like saying these terrible things to you, like, you wouldn't be friends with that person. Like you would not want to be around that person. But for some reason, and this is something I struggle with still, is like we let our voice in our head is like the biggest critic and somebody that you would never be around. And so, yeah, 100% I agree with that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is you have control to what that person said, because it's your own head. You're making those yeah. comments. So, exactly. So make that person like the Richard Simmons of your brain, super positive and cheering you on the whole way.
I love that. Yeah, the Richard Simmons of your brain. That's great.
All right. Well, talking about your school time, a couple of things I want to touch on. Firstly, and this isn't blaming the school, but you obviously came from a household where you weren't just weren't in an environment to be taught good nutritional choices and fitness choices. Was there any education on the school side? Were there any were you pushed towards healthy options? Obviously, the people around you could see that you were definitely having some potential health problems with your weight?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. As far as I know, in public schools, there's no real course on especially nutrition. I remember when I was in junior high, we had PE, obviously, and I think they're even taking that away, which is crazy to me. But we had PE, and so every day you would do some sort of physical activity. But I remember there was one day where they talked to us about nutrition labels and how to read the back of a nutrition label. And that's I'm trying to think back, and that's the only time we had any talk about nutrition in school. And that's through all of high school, junior high, anything I can remember. That was it.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like such an obvious place to start with fixing the health of the whole country. And did you ever see Jamie Oliver's TV shows that he did about trying to fix the school food?
I think I've seen clips from it on YouTube.
Yeah. So he was successful in England, I believe, where he's from. And he tried to do it here. And he was successful in that school district for a short time. I think they regressed. But yeah, that's when our children learn, despite of whatever household they're from, that's when you have the opportunity to teach them about exercise. Like you said, don't take PE away, encourage it, make sure it's fun for them. And then when they have their food choices in the cafeteria, make them ones that are going to nurture them. They're going to nourish them. And we're just sending the complete opposite message in many, many of our schools at the moment.
Yeah, it just blows me away how little of an education there is, or even there's just people don't even try, the school systems don't even try. And I understand that it's not as easy as just just implement it. I get that there's so many things that have to go into that. But at the same time, just using that as an excuse to not do anything is it blows my mind, because obesity is killing people more rapidly than almost anything else. And it's completely preventable, completely, and it's reversible as well. So you can prevent and you can also reverse it. So the fact that it's killing as many people as it is it's terrible, and it's starting earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. And I mean, you see kids that are 5 years old that you're just how is that happening? And it's it's easy to want to blame the parents, but it's more society than anything. And it really is heartbreaking. And that's why I get so fired up about it, because I'm so I am somebody that was obese, right? Obviously. And I was somebody that I felt like I was failed by the system, or whatever you want to say. But even with all of those things that might be going against you, there is a way out. And it's not as crazy as some people think. Like with weight loss, we like to, I don't want to say everybody, but especially for me, what I would do is I would turn trying to lose weight into this mythical huge dragon that I had to slay. That so when you think of it like that, how do you slay a dragon? I don't freaking know. Who knows? I don't know what to do. When you think of it as this huge mountain you have to climb, if you want to use it as that, that is daunting. But in reality, it's just small steps that you need to take every single day. And it is so incredibly possible. And it's so possible to lose weight and to keep that weight off. It's so possible. And people need to stop thinking of me as this huge dragon and just instead think of it as these little steps they need to take every day that will eventually lead to you conquering the dragon or you climbing up that mountain, because that's all it is. It's just small steps every single day.
Brilliant. Well, I want to get to your journey in just a second where you started making the changes and what you chose to do. But the other thing I just want to touch on just for a moment, what about the mental side? Did you suffer any bullying, and what were your self-esteem issues as you were getting bigger and bigger in those formative years?
Oh, that's a great question. So actually, I will say that I'm very lucky, kind of, that I wasn't bullied very much growing up. Now, the reason I say kind of is the reason I didn't get bullied was because I was my biggest bully. So I was very, very good at making fun of myself before anybody else had a chance to do it. So if you want to think of it think of Chris Farley back in the day, right? Recipes, but he was very good at making fun of himself, and that's what he did. So I almost tried to emulate that. So I would be very over the top. And so I didn't deal with much bullying as far as I think I almost attribute it to when that happened when I was in ninth grade, when I talked about with the football thing. I felt so demoralized, and I had no power over the situation. So instead of trying to better myself, I decided, okay, instead of letting that ever happen again, I'm just going to make fun of myself so nobody has a chance to do it. And so it worked as far as not getting bullied too much and dealing with people being mean to me. But I would make fun of myself so much that you start to believe what you're saying, and you start to have no, like, I had no self-worth. Like, I felt like I was worthless even in high school. You know, I was quote unquote, if you want to call it, like, popular, and like, I didn't have to deal with, again, people making fun of me because everyone knew who I was. They're like, no, you can't make fun of him. Like, he's cool. But I felt completely worthless. And so I attribute it to almost wearing like a mask. So this is a kind of a funny story. So in high school, I had a nickname, and my nickname was Cupcake. And the reason that I got the nickname was actually when I was a sophomore, I wasn't the best student as far as just like learning. So I was actually in a lot of special ed classes. But a lot of my classes, kids were in it because they just didn't really apply themselves. And a lot of the kids that were in the classes weren't the nicest kids. You know, I was in a lot of classes with a lot of, like, if you want to call it, like, at-risk kids, right? So they were pretty mean. So one day they decided to try and give everybody nicknames. And when they got to me, they thought that it would be funny to call me Cupcake, right? Making fun of how fat I was. And instead of letting that, like, crush me, I actually was like, I actually kind of like that name. And so throughout high school, I kind of took on that persona. And it's funny because, like I said, I wore a mask kind of. So in classes where people knew me as Cupcake, I would be very loud, like almost obnoxious. I'm sure the teacher didn't like me very much. I would make jokes all the time. And then if I was in a class where people only knew me as John or just by my name, I would be very reserved and I wouldn't talk very much. So I use that as like a way to like put on this mask and be this like different person. And so, yeah, I was lucky that I didn't get bullied too much, but it's because I was doing the bullying to myself.
See, that's really interesting. And reason I say that is I was in the same place on the opposite side of the spectrum in school, where I was the skinniest kid, the tiniest kid, you know, little awkward little bucktooth Englishman. and so, but that was my coping mechanism, is I would make fun of myself. And I think there was, you know, initially the disarming part for that was, oh God, you know, if he can make those jokes about himself, I probably shouldn't mess with him because he's probably going to make me look like an idiot too. You know what I mean? Because you were good at making jokes. But like you said, and I never even thought about that until you said that right now, is that is also a breeding ground for some negative, you know, thoughts about your own self-worth as well.
Yeah, and it's like the older I get and the more I realize that that was some deep-rooted stuff that like I've still been working through. It's been getting better, but like it messed me up for a long time because I started to feel like I can only like have friends if I'm making fun of myself. And then it was crazy. This is kind of another tangent, but it really, again, like I want to get made fun of too much, but it made it to where people kind of felt comfortable of like making jokes. And this was like legit friends of mine that weren't trying to actually hurt my feelings. They just thought it would be funny to make a joke. So a good example was I was actually at the mall. This is when I was like, I don't know, 16, 17. I don't remember how old I was. I was at the mall with a group of friends and there was a girl there that I was like, oh, this girl is cute. So I was trying, you know, I was trying to talk to her. And we were walking through the mall. We were going to go see a movie and we walked past this place called Torrid. Now Torrid is it's a plus size clothing store for women. And so she thought it would be funny. She pointed at the store and she was like, hey John, if you were a girl, you'd shop there. And I remember just looking at her and like everybody can tell that it was not funny to me. Right. And so she could tell that it like hurt my feelings. She felt really bad, but it's just funny because like I made it so like normal to make fun of myself that people started to feel like it was okay for them to like make fun of me. Now it didn't happen too much, but it's crazy how that can happen. You know, like you think that it's going to be this whole thing that's going to get you not made fun of, but eventually, especially like really close friends of yours see you do it so much, they think it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, on the surface, the mask is saying, oh, I'm totally fine with that. But inside, you know, you're still getting your feelings hurt, even despite that coping mechanism. All right. Well, so let's reel back to where you were before. So you're standing there with your sandwich and your bottle of water. So take us through, you know, the initial choices that you made and also the how you educated yourself on what to eat and how to move.
Yeah. So when I first started losing weight, like I said, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And so what I employed is what I call the common sense diet. Now, what this diet is, I mean, it can be for anybody, but it works really well if you're very, very, very obese. because it's like it takes away things that anybody, no matter how much knowledge you know about nutrition, knows is unhealthy. So what I did was I stopped drinking soda. And for me, I would drink easily, not joking, over a 2 liter of soda a day, because like it was normal for me to go to 7-Eleven and get the double gulp, which is 2 liters of soda, right? And that would just be one of the times I drank soda that day. So almost every day I was probably drinking over 1500 calories alone just in soda, right? So I took that away. That was always something I knew whenever I would try and think, oh, I want to lose weight, I'll cut out soda. Like that was one of the first things I would always do. I would cut out soda. That was like the first thing that I would always do. And then the next thing that I would do was I would cut out like fast food. So, and for me, that was actually a pretty big step, because again, especially once, you know, once I turned 20 and stuff like that, I was making my own money. I didn't cook. So I would get fast food every day, sometimes twice a day, almost every day. It was twice a day. And then I would cut out like chips and snacks. So that's what I call the common sense diet. So no soda, no fast food, no junk food. And so that's what I did at the start. And I was still eating. I would eat sandwiches a lot. I still eat sandwiches a lot. I like sandwiches. So I would just – I just did that. And I actually – the one thing that's good about being very, very overweight is that you can make small changes and actually see some pretty big results. So, you know, just by doing that, I saw some pretty big results. And at this time, it's actually – it was a blessing in disguise, because I had such a – I just didn't have much money, so I couldn't afford a gym membership. And for the longest time, I always felt like if you wanted to lose weight, you need to be going to the gym, right? That's like that's what you need to be doing. But in reality, I realized that what you're eating is monumentally more important than what you're doing in the gym when it comes to weight loss. And a saying that I like to use now is weight loss happens in the kitchen and fitness happens in the gym. They can help each other out, but they're still kind of a little bit different. They don't need to be, you know, intertwined as much as at least I thought when I was, you know, first trying to lose weight. So again, it was like a blessing in disguise. So I wasn't working out at all. But then once I started losing a little bit more weight, I was able to get a gym membership. And what I did at the start, because I was so afraid to lift weights or anything like that, was I actually would do like, I would do basically like an hour of cardio, and I would split it between, I would start doing like the bike, and then I would do the elliptical. And then I would do like some sort of just like a treadmill, just like walking on the treadmill, right? So that's like all I would do for the first few months. And then, you know, I started losing a good amount of weight. I just kind of started, you know, with my weight loss, I started at a good point, like, you know, making right decisions, like feeling like I was making the right, like doing the right things. But it eventually actually ended with me getting to a point where I actually struggled with like binge eating. Now, the reason that that happened was because I didn't know really much about nutrition. So in my head, I just saw calories, right? So I just need to cut back on calories. And again, like I said, with the common sense diet and stuff like that, it came from a good place. It started with good decisions, but then it turned into this game of how many calories can I cut out, you know, in a day? And so I ended up eating anywhere from like 12 to 700 calories. Like that's all I would be eating. And yeah, it was. And so I always say, like, you know, listen to what I've done. Hopefully I'm not trying to tell everybody to do what I've done, because again, like I didn't know what I was doing. And again, you know, there were mistakes, but I've learned from them, and, you know, it's made me a better person, you know, today. But I ended up just, you know, cutting calories. And then once I started, you know, getting to quote unquote, like a normal weight, like I got down to about 200 pounds, I actually decided I need to start like lifting, because I was actually thinking about joining the military. And at this point I had lost all the weight, but I had no strength. I couldn't do push-ups or pull-ups or, you know, anything like that, sit-ups. So like, I need to start lifting because I need to be able to do that if I want to actually join the military. And so that's when I started actually looking up YouTube videos on, you know, how do you do a back workout? How do you do a chest workout? So I just kind of started doing like regular bodybuilding workouts. And then, so it got the issues with eating got a little bit better, because I just kind of naturally started eating more because I was working out and I was just hungrier, right? So luckily it got a little bit better. It definitely didn't get completely fixed. And I struggled with, started struggling really bad with binge eating, where I would do like quote unquote well. And what I mean by that is I would eat like 800 calories for a couple days, feeling like I'm like in my mind, oh, I'm killing, I'm doing really good, you know, 800, 1200 calories or whatever. But then I would binge eat on the fourth day, and it was like clockwork. And that's just how it worked. And I would be like, what is going on? Because at the time, I had never heard the term binge eating. I didn't know that it was like a normal thing. You know, it was like something that people struggled with. I just thought that I wasn't dedicated enough. When in reality, I was just starving myself, but I didn't realize it, right? I thought I was just being dedicated. So I started lifting, and that's when I actually started kind of making YouTube videos. I started with my Instagram first. And that's where the name Obese to Beast came. Was I was actually, it's a funny story. I felt bad because I was posting so much on my regular Instagram of my fitness stuff. So I literally was like, okay, I'll just make a fitness Instagram where I can post whatever I want and not feel bad about it. And so the name just came from, I just felt like Obese to Beast sounded good. So I was like, nobody's taking it, so I'll take it. Right. And so that's where the name came from. And I started like posting stuff on Instagram, just like transformation pictures, stuff like that. Again, this is when I had lost most of the weight. I pretty much started my Instagram after I had lost almost all of it. And then I just kind of started posting stuff on there. People were getting like inspired. They were messaging me saying how it was helping them and they wanted me to start a YouTube channel. And so that's when I decided to start a YouTube channel. And that's when I started, you know, making videos and showing people like what I was eating in a day and all of that stuff. And then, you know, kind of fast forward a little bit, that's when there was a couple of videos that I knew I wanted to make when I made a YouTube channel. So one was just the regular, like, you know, transformation video showing where I started to where I am now. And then the second one was I wanted to show like full day of eatings, because a question I got a lot of was, what are you eating? So I wanted to do those. And the third one was actually a video about loose skin. Now, when you lose a significant amount of weight, because at this time I had lost about 160 pounds, you're left with loose skin, right? And so it was a question that I would get a lot of on Instagram. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to make this video. And lo and behold, I had no idea, but the video absolutely blew up, and it still blows my mind when I think about it, because I mean, it went unbelievably viral. It was everywhere. It was on, like, Ashton Kutcher shared it on Facebook. It was on every single news outlet everywhere. It was crazy. And eventually actually got on Ellen's radar, Ellen DeGeneres. She actually ended up having me on the Ellen show, and I was able to share my story on there. And, you know, all of that stuff, like, that's what eventually led me to being able to make YouTube videos and create content for a living. So, you know, fast forward a little bit more after that, you know, I'm making videos and, you know, I had a few jobs in between all those that I was, you know, for a while I was working two jobs. I would work at Starbucks. I would wake up at 3 a.m. and I would work until 12. And then I would get off at 12 and I would work at the gym I worked at a 24-hour fitness. I would work from 1 to 8 p.m. and then I would work out after that. And that's like what a day was like for me. And then on top of that, I was still trying to make YouTube videos. But eventually I was able to leave the gym, and then I was able to leave Starbucks. I actually really liked working at Starbucks. That's a good job. But I digress. And then so I ended up just, like, you know, creating videos. And, you know, I think a couple years go by, and then I decide, okay, I want to do a men's physique show. It's like a bodybuilding show. You know, when you diet down, you get on stage. So I ended up doing that. And that's when I got down to my lowest ever weight of 180 pounds. Now, this, I was really scared to diet down like this, because when it comes to doing a men's physique show, you have to be unbelievably strict on your diet. And now, like I've said in the past, I struggled with binge eating. And it had gotten better, but I wasn't sure if I had, you know, if I should have done the show. I wasn't sure if I was ready for that yet. But, you know, I just was like, you know what, this is something I want to do. I wanted to go from one extreme to another. So I ended up doing the show. Again, I got down to my lowest weight of 180 pounds. But during prep and stuff like that, you have to track every single calorie you're eating, every gram. And, you know, it just got kind of daunting. So once I finished the show, I told myself, I am not going to track anymore. I'm done tracking calories, at least for a little bit. And that's I'm really glad that I did that, because it made me realize I had really conquered the binge eating, and I really had, like, really helped my relationship with food. And one thing that actually helped with that a lot was, a couple months after the show, that's when I actually found CrossFit. So up until this point, I was just doing regular bodybuilding workouts, and then, you know, a chest day, a back day, a leg day, and then, you know, I would do cardio afterwards. And then once I found out about CrossFit, you know, I did my first ever workout, actually filmed it and put it on my YouTube channel. I absolutely fell in love. Like, I watched all the documentaries. I drank the Kool-Aid right away. I ended up I bought a pair of Metcons before I ever did my first workout. Like, I was like fully into it, right? And that with CrossFit. So I've been doing CrossFit for about two years and a few months now. And I mean, I can't explain how much I absolutely love it, because it has truly helped me with not just food, but helped me with my body image as well. Because when you're doing only bodybuilding stuff, like all you care about is how you look. Like, that's what it's all about, right? And now, because I still do like bodybuilding style workouts, but I don't care as much about how I look versus how I'm performing and how I feel. And it's so amazing the amount of stuff I've learned by doing CrossFit, the amount of stuff I've been able to like accomplish. Because, you know, growing up, I was obese, so I wasn't very athletic, obviously. And then, you know, doing bodybuilding, it's not like you're doing anything as far as like athleticism, at least for me, I wasn't. So like going into a CrossFit gym, I remember the first time I wanted to do a box jump, I was absolutely terrified to jump on the 24-inch box. And I ended up doing it that day. And then in the workout, I think I did like 30 of them, right? And so like just those little like wins every day have been so incredible, you know, through finding CrossFit. And, you know, I've been doing CrossFit and like bodybuilding for the past like two years and a couple months. And I mean, I absolutely love it. And that's kind of the whole story in like a very condensed. There's obviously tons of other stuff that have gone on, but hopefully I didn't miss anything too big there.
Yeah, no, well, there's a couple of things I want to kind of clarify. Firstly, how tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
Okay, so 5'8", that 360 is very different than 6'4", 360.
I was a very round guy.
And how long did it take you to get from that 360 to that 200 mark?
So when I lost the first initial weight, it was like over about a little over a year. Now, like I said, it wasn't through the healthiest means. And like when I help people lose weight, I definitely do it in a different way. But again, like, I'm not ashamed of what I did, because it is what I did. And I'm not going to ever lie about that. So again, I didn't make the best decisions, but I learned from them and I moved on from them.
All right. And the other thing is, so you're at the right weight, that you were going for. You did the physique show. And this is, again, not to demonize anyone that does bodybuilding physique. Yeah. But how did you feel, even though you looked, you know, the ideal weight now and, you know, probably as lean as you'd been, how were you feeling at that point?
Yeah. So again, like you said, not to demonize anybody, because that's not what I'm trying to do. But my experience was it was hard. I mean, it was so hard. You have to be, and this is like something that even competitors will say, like when you're doing a show, you have to be so incredibly selfish, because the amount of prep you have to do for your food, the amount that you have to, about time you have to spend weighing everything out and making sure, like, you can't really go out to eat very much. So it was hard, like, especially the last few weeks, like, you're just so tired all the time. And I remember I actually did a series on my channel where the last 7 days, they call like peak week, right? Where you're kind of like everything's coming together and everything's like ending. I did a video every day for this past 7 days. And I seriously, like, I'll look back on those videos. I'm like, I don't know how I did it. I'll start the videos. You can just see, like, I started them with no energy. It was hard. They constantly say it with like bodybuilding, is like the time that you look the strongest and the best is actually when you're your weakest, you know, because you're so lean, you have such little body fat. And, you know, like now I weigh about 205 and I feel completely healthy. And I don't think I have, you know, an obscene amount of body fat on me at all. And so it just goes to show you like how small I was, you know. It's like 25 pound difference. It was hard. You don't feel good. And I mean, that's kind of, it's just natural when you're that low in body fat.
Yeah. Well, my generation, I'm 44. So we were raised with the bodybuilder image being the ideal fit man or, you know, or fit woman. And, you know, even now as the internet came through, as CrossFit and some, you know, just fitness in general has become a lot wiser. You know, we understand now that picture was taken, like you said, at the absolute peak, probably with some help of some diuretics and Photoshop as well. Yeah. And these people, men and women, are having this dysmorphia, you know, this feeling of low self-esteem because they can't look like this mythical creature that's on the front of a magazine that doesn't even exist in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, but they're not to just pick on bodybuilding. I know the powerlifting, especially the older school powerlifting community, suffered this as well. Incredibly, incredibly strong and extremely unhealthy because they were pushing their body to lift as much as possible at the expense of their health. And with the bodybuilding, obviously, we know that that happens as well. If people aren't very clever with their cycling and how they eat and you know, all the other health arenas around that. So, you know, is that something that you've observed with a lot of these people that are beginning this journey, that they're still kind of chasing this mythical unicorn of the bright orange six pack on the front of Muscle and Fitness?
Yeah, it's so prevalent, especially like on Instagram, right? Because obviously I'm on there as well. You see people, like, I'm not trying to demonize or anything like that, but you see people that are in good shape that have, you know, they understand that people want to look like them. So it's so easy to prey on people that might not know as much and to try and get people to buy your program or to do this or to trust you because you have a six pack. And when in reality, it's people always aspire to be what they see and stuff like that, but they just don't realize all of the, I mean, obviously there's always going to be hard work that goes into it, but all of the other tricks as well. It's easy to fall into a trap of, you know, somebody that might not have your best interest at heart.
Right. Well, moving back to CrossFit, because I've been doing CrossFit for, I think it's 11 years now. And, wow. You know, I just love it. And as a first responder, I've seen that it doesn't have to be, you know, what you do, but that kind of format, that high intensity interval or some version of, is extremely effective when it comes to law enforcement, firefighting, you know, and then even like the combat sports. And you see, you know, you watch the Ultimate Fighter show, they're doing a lot of that very similar type training. How did you get introduced to CrossFit? And then what was your very first workout like, and how, what effect did it have it on you?
So the way that I actually got introduced to CrossFit was, my brother was actually, so it's a funny story. So my brother came to my physique show that I did. At my physique show, there was this girl named Sam that he thought was pretty, and they ended up kind of talking, and she did CrossFit. And Sam and my brother are actually now boyfriend and girlfriend. They've been together for a while now, over 2 years, right? So he ended up, like, he had been kind of maybe thinking about CrossFit. He saw that she did it. So then he was like, I want to start doing CrossFit. So he went to her gym, and I watched how much my brother loved it. And my brother always, like, he had been into fitness for a little bit. He's actually lost a significant amount of weight, like 40 to 50 pounds, I think. And so, you know, he lost most of that weight. But I could just tell he didn't really love doing the bodybuilding stuff. It was more, I'm doing this because I have to, not because I want to, right? But when he started doing CrossFit, it was like, I enjoy this. This is fun. I really like doing CrossFit. And I saw that, and I saw that passion in him. And I was like, that looks interesting, because I grew up, grew up is a strange word to use, but I was in the, you know, the camp of I'm a bodybuilder, and I made videos, and I made my living off of being, I don't want to say a bodybuilder, but someone that did that kind of training. So you always see the CrossFit fail videos. And so I was never a negative person, so I never really talked down about it. But in my head, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to try CrossFit because people get injured and they have bad form and blah, 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 because you see all the fail videos. So I was like, at first I was kind of hesitant, and I knew my viewers would be hesitant as well, because again, they had the same thoughts. But I saw how much he loved it. And then he had me watch the documentaries. So it was like the Fittest on Earth thing. It was like the first one where Matt Frazier actually won the games. And then I watched Froning, the Rich Froning documentary. And like I said, I was hooked before I did a workout. So I went out before I did my first workout. I bought the Metcons, and then I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. So we went and we did the first CrossFit workout that we did. I actually remember what it is. So it was five rounds. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it was five rounds of deadlifts at 225. I think it was like 10 deadlifts. And then it was 30, like a 20 or 30 calorie row, and then 60 or 50 double unders. And I ended up doing 150 singles. Right. And so that was my first workout. It took me forever. And it destroyed me. Like, I had never jump roped ever in my life, I don't think. So I was, obviously that was a struggle. And it was funny because that was my first workout, and I like had this vendetta against double unders. Like, I became obsessed with learning how to do double unders. So I actually learned double unders pretty quick, because like I always had that in the back of my head of how much it destroyed me. But yeah, so that was the first workout. It took me like over 20 minutes. And I've actually since redone the workout with like heavier weight, like 275 on the deadlifts. And it was funny because I was doing sumo deadlifts in the workout. And I think the coach was just like, I'll let him do whatever he wants. Because like now I'm like, you wouldn't do sumo deadlifts in a CrossFit workout most of the time, unless it called for it, right? But it's funny. So I've done the workout with like a heavy jump rope, heavier deadlifts, and you know, the same calorie row, and I've completely destroyed my time. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, so that was the first workout, and I mean I was hooked. And I remember when I first started doing CrossFit, I was telling the coach there, yeah, I might come in like 3 times a week and I still want to do my bodybuilding stuff. And he was like, okay, yeah, we'll see. And then, I mean, I was almost from the beginning, I tried to stay with the 3 times a week, but I mean, I would just constantly be thinking about it. I was just constantly researching videos, you know, about like how to do overhead squat or like how to do this, like better form on rowing, whatever. And so then I quickly started just doing CrossFit 5 times a week. And luckily at this point I was already, you know, self-employed making videos and stuff like that. So I had the free time to be able to do CrossFit and bodybuilding. And so I've honestly been doing like 2-a-days for the past like 2 years, not every day, but you know, usually about 4 days out of the week, I'll do a CrossFit workout and a bodybuilding workout the same day.
Right. And then your body weight is where you want it now. You're just working on the skills and the strength and the endurance.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like I feel comfortable at 205, and they are like, sometimes I think like, oh man, maybe if I lost like 10 pounds, gymnastic stuff would be easier, which it definitely would be. So I think the only time it's funny because like, it's not like I want to lose weight because I'm like, oh, I need to get shredded or I want to be able to see my abs better. It's like, no, I just maybe want to get better at CrossFit. So that's why I would want to lose weight. So I think like if I ever decided to maybe lose weight, it would be for that, not because I'm trying. Like, I feel very healthy where I'm at.
Brilliant. Yeah. And that's the thing. When you talked about the double unders, that's what I love about that kind of training is, yeah, and again, kudos to the bodybuilding industry and that little kind of unspoken war that was going on between CrossFit and bodybuilding for a bit with the fail videos and all that stuff. The reality is they're both now learning from each other. I mean, there's a lot of accessory work now in CrossFit and the more progressive gyms that is totally bodybuilding and vice versa. You know, I think there's a throwback to more of the compound movements in bodybuilding where people are doing deadlifts and squats and some of the older school stuff that they got away from with all the machines. But the tangible growth that you get from a CrossFit style workout where your goals are, instead of moving the pin down one block, that you get your first double under, your first rope climb, your first handstand pushup. I think it's just, you get so much more out of that than just going up. And even with the barbell stuff, okay, you PR 5 pounds more than you did last time. That's not really a giant thing. But when you have someone who walked through the gym a year ago that looked like a hunchback, and now, you know, they're able to climb a rope for the first time, it's a night and day. So I think that's what keeps people from going, where a lot of people, including myself, used to be like 3 months on, then a month off, you know, fall off the wagon all the time, is you're constantly chasing that next skill, that next progression that's making you even better when you walk out of the gym.
Yeah, 100%. Like that is one of my favorite things about CrossFit. Actually, funny story. Today, on Tuesdays at my gym, we go through phases, but right now we're at a phase where every Tuesday we do like we test an open workout, right? And so last year, not to the exact day, but last year we tested the same workout that we tested today. I believe it was 13.4. And so what that workout is, I'm trying to find it right now. But it's like, I think it's like an 18-minute AMRAP. It has 15 box jumps, 24-inch box, 12 shoulder to overhead, and then 9 toes to bar, right? And it's 18 minutes of that. And so last year, I got 6 rounds plus 21 reps. And then I just finished like an hour ago, right? I finished that workout and I got 8 rounds plus 26 reps. So like I did better by 2 rounds, but like I'm actually filming a video. And in the video, I said like, that's one of my favorite things about CrossFit is just how tangible getting better is. You can just see it. And like when you beat a workout by 2 rounds, it's not like you just kind of push yourself a little bit better. You got better, like 100%, and it's super easy to see. And that's really fun to be able to go up against, you know, obviously what's great with CrossFit is you can go against other people and it's like you're, you know, you're trying to get better and you're like, you know, you have that one person in the gym that you guys are super similar and sometimes he beats you, sometimes you beat him. For me, it's my brother. He gets really mad when I beat him. But Like, that's nice. But then what's even nicer is being able to compete against your former self. And it's just so much fun because it will push you to try so much harder in a workout when you know that you've previously done this well and you want to beat that former, you know, your former self.
Yeah. And then you hit the nail on the head with that. When I started way, way, way back, I'd get the workouts from the main site. And you literally compete and then you scroll down and you know, there weren't that many people doing it back then on that site specifically. And so you'd find, you know, Björn from Stockholm in Sweden was also 6'1", 168, you know, and he did it. And this time you're like, okay, well, now I can match myself to humans that look exactly like me and, you know, physically. But then, you know, the games came, and there was that pull away. I think everyone in CrossFit can acknowledge that. For a while, the games took the spotlight. But what's so great now is to see the focus has gone back to just what you said, being better than yourself. So the whiteboard isn't about, I mean, it's fun to have the friendly competitions, but it's not about beating the guy to the next or to the left or the right of you. It's about when you redo the workouts, being better than you were 6 months ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, especially if you're aging, you know, and you're actually fitter 5 years on than when you walk through the door.
Yeah, that's really cool. And something that I've been actually focused on recently is focusing on effort over outcome. So because it's hard not to be, you know, focused on how well you did. But lately I've been trying to really focus on, like, as long as I genuinely feel good about the effort I put in, I'm not too worried about the outcome. Now, it's definitely easier said than done, and I'm still learning, but I think that can be a really helpful thing, is like, as long as you honestly feel good about the effort you put in, the outcome should be secondary.
Yeah. For sure. And I think the same with form. I know I've changed my focus a bit now, where I'm not looking around to see. I mean, I'll chase someone if we're close and we're evenly matched, just to push myself a little bit more. But if I'm taking any shortcuts with form or, you know, anything at all, then I'll gate myself back. It's like, because you know, think of yourself like the no rep in the games. You know, if you're shortcutting your movement and you're doing that hundreds of times over the course of a year, you've learned those horrible movement patterns. And I think that's where we were a few years ago as far as coaches, where we didn't quite understand that. But now I think, like you said, that good range of motion with intensity is far more important than shortcutting just to try and win in the gym, quote unquote.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I want to just go touch on the skin. So I know you did the video and you had, you know, from 360 pounds, a lot of excess skin. Have you noticed that start to reduce over the last couple of years?
So yeah, I would say over the last few years, it's definitely reduced. I believe that it's probably where it's going to be. I don't have any like crazy, like grandiose visions of it completely shrinking, because I mean, I honestly feel very lucky and blessed that it's only as much as it is. Because I, like, when I look at pictures of myself, of how big I was, like, I cannot believe there's not more. Because I was big, man. I was a big guy. And so the fact that I don't really deal with it too much on my arms, you know, on my lower legs, it's just kind of mainly focused on my chest, my, you know, my abdomen, lower back, and legs, and upper legs. I'm honestly thankful, you know, that it could have been a lot worse. And now, you know, a lot of people ask me about, like, why haven't I gotten surgery? Why don't I get it removed? And for me personally, it doesn't bother me enough. Like, I don't have any rashes I'm very lucky for that. Like, because I definitely think if I was starting to actually have, like, issues with rashes or itching, or, you know, other people have, like, legit, like, can get fungus and stuff like that growing. Luckily, I've never had any of those issues. If that was the case, I'm sure I would be singing a different tune right now. But, you know, right now, it doesn't affect me too much. I just make sure I wear compression clothing when I'm doing my CrossFit workouts. You know, I wear like the regular Under Armour compression tank tops, and I have I really like the Pair of Thieves underwear from Target. They work really well, and they're like slight compression, and so it doesn't really affect me too much.
I wish I could remember who it was, but I think it was either Joe Rogan or Barbell Shrugged or Tim Ferriss, but one of them had a guest who actually had, I don't know if they'd been obese or if they were a coach, but there was some supplement. I can't remember if it was a herb or a cream or what it was, but that they had found that if you rub it on you know, previously obese patients' excess skin. It took about 6 months to build up whatever level it was, but they actually got the skin to return to normal. And it kills me because this has come up one more time in a previous episode, and I still to this day can't remember where I heard that. But you know, that would be great if I could find it for a start. But if there was a way of encouraging people even more, like when you get back to this point, there's an alternative to surgery.
Yeah, I think that's I've heard of that too, and I've had people message me about it. I'm just always so weary about really pretty much anything, especially when it comes to loose skin. Because I mean, there's all, and I'm not saying that it's not true because I've never tried it, right? So I don't know for sure. But like for me, I'm always just kind of weary about like because there's those stupid wraps that people sell that are just genuinely worthless, you know, not to be negative or anything like that, but I don't like those things because I get so many people that try and sell them to me. But like, I'm always kind of weary because I understand that for me, at least from what I've seen, like the only option to really get rid of it is surgery. And so I don't know too much about it. I've heard about that, and maybe I should like look into it, maybe try it, because I think it'd be good because then I could actually show people if it actually works, right? You know, I can film it from the very start. But yeah, so I'm always kind of weary about those things. And honestly, like I get people that message me, right? They're saying like, I want to lose weight, but I'm afraid of loose skin. And one, if you're so big that you're afraid that you're going to have loose skin, I can guarantee you will be happier at a lower weight with loose skin than you are morbidly obese. I promise you. I'm able to bend down and tie my shoe now. I could not do that when I was 360 pounds. I can jump. I could not do that when I was 360 pounds. I can go into any restaurant and sit down at a booth. I could not do that when I was 360 pounds. I don't have to scan and make sure the seats don't have armrests, because if they have armrests, I won't fit in the seat. I couldn't do that when I was, you know. So there's like so many things that I am so thankful for, right? And then going even further, I can do a freaking muscle up. Like there was no way I could even hang from a pull-up bar before. And so I'm telling you, like if you're worried about loose skin, I promise you, once you get down and lose the weight, you will look at it differently.
Yeah. What's your one rep max on your back squat?
390.
Okay. So, and what was the weight that you couldn't do when you were in school?
I couldn't do 135.
Yeah. There we go. So that says it all. That says it all.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, I want to transition to some closing questions in a moment, but you have just started a podcast of your own, Work for Change. So if you wouldn't mind telling me what made you start a podcast and, you know, how people can find it.
Yeah. So I have a podcast, obviously. It's called Work for Change. And the premise of the podcast is mainly about we'll do a good amount of interviews, but it's with me and my brother. So we have COAs. So it's nice to be able to have somebody on the podcast always to talk to you, because I'm sure you can agree it's difficult finding a guest every week. And so we don't want to always try and be finding guests. So it's nice that we can kind of just talk to each other. But it's all about just if there's something that you want to change in your life. And obviously a lot of it's centered around CrossFit and fitness for us, because that's what we care about. Weight loss as well, because obviously that's what I'm all about. But it's like, if there's something that you want to change, you have to work for it. You can't just hope for things to happen. And so we're just focused on even mindset stuff and things like that. And the podcast is something I've wanted to do for a long time, but I knew that I didn't want to make it all about weight loss, because there's only so much you can talk about when it comes to weight loss. So I wanted to be able to talk about other stuff. And that's why I really like being able to have it with my brother, because we can talk about anything we want, really, you know. And so it's nice. Yeah, I really like it. We have 12 episodes up now by the time we're recording this. And it's really fun. I really, really, really enjoy it. And I mean, if you're looking for another podcast, I would love to have you check it out, because I think that it's pretty good and we enjoy making it. So
brilliant. Yeah, I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of people that have, you know, listened to your journey now and probably want to listen just because you can relate. You know, you know where they were, you know, and some of the products, for example, this one I'm sitting here, like I told you, I was a rake my whole life, so that's not a specific struggle that I've been through. So I'm sure that'd be a great resource for a lot of people listening. All right, so then I want to transition to the beginning of the closing questions. One, the first one that I always ask people, is there a book that you love to recommend to people? It can be about what we've talked about today or something completely different.
That's actually funny. So my New Year's resolution for the past 2 years has been to read more books. Last year, I failed tremendously. This year I've been doing a lot better. So I actually recently just finished Extreme Ownership, and I loved that book so much. I think that a lot of this stuff, it just instilled it. It like explained things that I already knew in my heart to be true, but I didn't know how to verbalize them. And so I really, really love that book, and I highly recommend that. The title says it all, right? Taking extreme ownership, kind of the same what I talked about in the beginning, fault versus responsibility. Like, take that responsibility, take ownership for those things. And then I'm in the middle of reading Obstacle is the Way, which is also a really good book that I like a lot. But for me, I haven't finished that, so I guess I couldn't really recommend that yet. But Extreme Ownership was an incredible read for me.
Brilliant. Yeah, we actually had Jocko on this show. He was amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he's an intense guy. I would love to get him on my podcast. And I think he's from San Diego, so hopefully in the future that can happen.
Yeah, no, he is definitely local. Okay, then the next question, the same thing, but a movie and or a documentary that you love.
Oh, man. A movie or documentary that I love. I would say, I mean, I just love movies. I'm like, I love going to the movies. And so, like, I feel like this is not going to be the most... Well, okay, I will say this. Not recently, but in the past few years, for the first time I watched Rudy. Do you know what that movie?
That's the football movie with the guy from Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Yeah. I had never seen it. And I watched that movie, and it's all about, you know, it's an underdog story basically. And I was crying. And I was like, the people that I was watching with, they're like, you've never seen this? How have you never seen this? But yeah, that's a really good one. And then also, as far as like recent movies, I recently watched Creed 2, and I've never wanted to become a boxer so bad in my life.
And what about documentaries? Are any of those that you've seen that you absolutely love?
I mean, there's so many. When it comes to like, because like a lot of the documentaries I like to watch are like food based ones, but the only issue is that usually when someone films a documentary on food, they have kind of an agenda they're trying to push. And so I will say one that really kind of helped me change that I don't necessarily 100% agree with is Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. And that's a documentary about it's all about this guy that did a juicing diet, and he just only drank juice for a long time. Again, I don't necessarily agree with that tactic of trying to lose weight, but it showed me what people are capable of, and it really was like part of what made me want to change. So if you are interested in like food documentaries, that's a good one. Again, I don't recommend doing a juicing diet to lose weight, but it can inspire you to maybe make some sort of change in your life.
Yeah, that was very sad. You see the second one where the truck driver Phil had put the weight back on again. I think that's
100%. That it's rough, man. Like that's another thing I've been really focused on as of late is focusing on sustainable weight loss. One of my favorite words in the world is sustainability. I talk about it so much on my channel because the sad truth is that anybody can lose weight. It's really not that hard. As long like if you're in a caloric deficit and there's ways that you can do that, like I talked about, I did it in a wrong way for a while. It's easy to do that, but it's not easy to lose it and keep it off. There's a statistic going around that says after 5 years, 95% of people that lose weight put it back on, and that breaks my heart because I know. I can only imagine what that feels like to lose all the weight and put it back on. And so I'm trying to do everything that I can to show people how to lose weight in a sustainable way. That's not going to be like a flash in the pan where you lose a bunch of weight and then you put it back on because that's not helping anybody. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, it's sad. It's sad because that's a story. That's the story that happens to most people is to losing the weight and gaining it back. Like if you look at that, that study recently with the Biggest Loser contestants where most of them put all the weight back on. It's about finding a way that isn't too drastic that you can sustain for the rest of your life. Like that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And I think the big focus on dieting is being, like you said, caloric deficit instead of, as you know, a lot of athletes now realize feeding and nourishing the body. And if you get that portion and it becomes a lifestyle change, it's probably going to be slower than any diet that you were about to do. But like you said, the sustainability, the weight is going to come off slowly and it's going to stay on. And at the same time, you're going to feel better and better and better, which is going to make reversing that not even an option, because why would you go back to feeling like shit?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, that's why, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I am so sure that I'll never go back to the size that I was because of the amount of like the lifestyle change I've had. And like the way that I like to live now is like, I don't even identify as somebody that used to be overweight. I identify as somebody that likes to work out and enjoys fitness and you know, likes to eat well and likes to feel good. So it's like, I don't even think of, because I think if you're always thinking of yourself as somebody that used to be obese from people that have lost weight, you're almost always tied to this former version of yourself. You almost have like, you know, want to think of like an ankle collar and you're like dragging along this old image of yourself. And I really feel like I've broken free from that completely. And I'm not that person anymore. I'm a completely new person. And so I think that that's a really important thing, is to not identify as somebody that's lost a lot of weight. I just identify as who I am now.
Yeah, I love that. I had a guest that did the same thing with alcoholism. They did, you know, being sober for X amount of time, and they kept getting their tokens. And you know, one day they were like, look, I need to stop identifying as a reformed alcoholic and just start living my life as me again.
Yeah, I love, exactly, 100%.
Brilliant. All right. The next question, is there a person that you would recommend to come on this podcast to talk to the first responders and military of the world?
Somebody that I would recommend. I would say, I mean, I have tons of friends that have like similar stories to me as far as like weight loss is concerned. So there's a couple people that come to mind. I have a friend, his name is Zach. He used to be even bigger than I was. And, his like Instagram name is Zach Attacks Fat. And, he's somebody, he really likes to like, you know, fitness as well. So I think that he could be a good person to come on the show as well.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I'll look him up on Instagram. Thank you. So the very last one, sure, before we talk about where we can find you and all your work, is what do you do now to decompress? Aside from exercising, unless maybe that's the main thing.
Well, that is definitely a huge part of it. But recently I've started like obviously reading, but actually like journaling and writing things down when I'm reading that I think are like, you know, solid points and things like that. So that's definitely something that I do. And then for me, I'm a man of faith. So, you know, I like to pray. I like to read the Bible, things like that. That's all stuff that helps me as well.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you so much, but I want to make sure that we talk about all your avenues. So your YouTube channel, what's the easiest way of finding that?
Just type in, on YouTube, just type in Obese to Beast and it'll pop up.
Okay. And it's at Obese to Beast on Instagram. Any other places people can find you and reach out to you?
Those are going to be the main places. And then there's Twitter at Obese to Beast as well. And then obviously the podcast, if you want to look it up, it's on all the platforms. It's also on YouTube. Just type in Work for Change and it should pop up.
Fantastic. All right. Well, John, thank you so much, you know, leading us through your journey. You know, obviously, as we talked about the childhood and you know, the ownership, though, of your own journey, I think is something that a lot of people can relate to. I know that many of the people that we see out there that have found themselves in a very, very bad place physically were probably not raised by, you know, a holistic farmer that was a yogi. And, you know, they were probably given some pretty shitty advice, you know, when they were growing up and some very poor habits. But to be able to see that, as we said, to forgive yourself for where you're at now, but realize that it's never too late, and to hear it from the horse's mouth, to hear your own journey, I think is going to inspire a lot of people. And it certainly inspired me. So I thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time to let me be on here and talk your ear off.